Good morning and welcome to Coffee. I'm Samantha Watson, and I'm here talking with Lori Wolf, who is the president and CEO of the Foraker Group.
Good morning.
Good morning. Lori, can you hear us okay?
I sure can. Thanks so much.
Wonderful. Well, thanks so much for being on today. Lori, I figured a good place to start is to maybe have you introduce yourself and the Foraker Group for folks who don't know.
Yeah, thanks so much. Lori Wolf again, lifelong Alaskan, born and raised in Anchorage, where my family came during mandatory doctor draft, actually, during the Vietnam War. And so I was actually born on Elmendorf Air Force Base, and my family grew up here, made a life. My mom ran the Anchorage Museum for 40 years, and I grew up in the museum with security guards kind of as my babysitters, just really learned an amazing life of service and creating community, and have a daughter, and I have taught her the same lessons, and so just really thrilled to be able to give back into my community. And part of that was in the help to create the 4-Acre Group. So 4-Acre is a nonprofit that serves nonprofits and tribal organizations all across Alaska. We have two wonderful board members in Bethel. So I have two statewide boards, one governing body, which is the legal entity, Val Davidson, on that board, former chair. And then we have an advisory council, which is made up of nonprofit and community foundation organizations all over the state. And Michelle DeWitt is on that board. So we're still feel real connected to Bethel and love visiting, but this is fun too. So thanks for inviting me. We provide a whole range of services. And really we just want to be in service to our nonprofits and tribal organizations. So we love it when people call and say, can you help me with this? Or how about that? And then, you know, if it's not us, then we're happy to redirect folks. But basically lots of people know us for training, facilitation, support of boards, tribal councils, nonprofit staff and volunteers who are just trying to make a difference in their communities.
Right. And I know, you know, in addition to supporting nonprofits, there's also, you know, a portion of the work is collecting, you know, data about nonprofits in different regions of the state,
exactly,
which is what we're here to talk about today. I'm curious, there was this recent report the Foraker Group put out about the impact of nonprofits in Alaska. And I'm wondering, I know we also spoke about a similar report last year. But could we maybe dive into this report and what you're looking at this year?
Absolutely. Yeah. So we do serve as the State Nonprofit Association. And so when we have that hat on, we do really two big things. We take on big public policy issues that impact Alaska and our nonprofits that are nonpartisan or bipartisan. And we try to move those forward on behalf of nonprofits in Alaska. And then we also do, as you mentioned, research. And so we have an overarching report that we talked about the last time I was with you, our economic impact report, which really thinks about how nonprofits are a part of Alaska's economy and the good that we're doing and our contribution to our communities and the state in terms of jobs and services and all the ways that we work with federal, state, and local government to keep our communities going. And then in 2025, in January, after all the shifts and changes, some of which were fairly catastrophic to organizations across our state and across our country, we did a temperature check, if you will, in January of 2025. And it was not good. But then we noticed throughout 2025 that it started to get a little quiet out there. We just weren't hearing from groups very much, and we, in terms of what was happening to them, and in light of the federal policy and funding changes, and we began to wonder and a little bit worry, honestly. So we went back out into the world and talked through some survey work and a collaboration with the Alaska Community Foundation on some data that they had around a funding request that they put out to anyone who had been impacted directly by the federal changes. And so this data is a little bit different because we really are focused on those who have been impacted the most. And I think that, you know, there's a couple, you know, there's kind of the good and the bad, if you will. And I don't think anyone would be surprised about either, frankly. So I'll give you the good news first. So the good news is that the nonprofits that were surveyed, you know, have reported amazingly wonderful and strong partnerships. They reported that people really trust that the work that they're doing. There's really high trust, really very high donor commitment, strong board leadership, you know, so even the ability to weather uncertainty was fairly high. We're 70% reporting like we can do this. And I think all of that just reflects this amazing resiliency of our organizations and Alaskans in general, just to be able to say, like, we got this. A storm? Sure, we got this. We can do this. Mm-hmm. And I think also just noting, right, they're not trying to do it alone. They're doing it with their partners. They're doing it with their donors. They're doing it in their communities. And that kind of sense of isolation that we hear so much about, this is really positive news that people are feeling and showing that sense of resilience. So that's the good news. Mm-hmm. Are you ready for the not so good news?
I am. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Well, and is it fair to frame it around the question of like how have these changes in the federal funding cuts impacted nonprofits in the region? Is that okay? Well, that's my question. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't have it broken down by region, so this is just mm-hmm. a statewide response. But I think people listening will resonate and say, like, oh yeah, I feel that. Yeah. I hope that they feel the thing that we just talked about too, the positive side. The not good side, now again, you know, this is just people who have, you know, where they would report that the top three funding sources are federal funds, right? And so, and that's not all of our organizations, but it is a fair number, because that's how we structured our work, right? And so I think a lot of people would say, you know, this relationship is on very shaky ground. We're seeing program cuts, reduced funding for administrative or operational costs, canceled funding overall, a lot of uncertainty. And then as a result of that, really cutting programs, cutting services, cutting staff because of the funding, you know, the inability to have that operational funding. And then, you know, a real need on the other hand to try to diversify. But we all know that diversification of our funding, you know, trying to get new funding sources, you know, it's a journey. It's not a sprint. You know, it is a journey, and it needs a runway. And so our organizations are really feeling the stress and the strain on, you know, not having that runway, not having that having the time and the ability to go on that journey. So I think, you know, I feel like people will know this, right? That let's pile on a little bit, right? High inflation, the war and its price inflation as well, around just basic human needs, around our fuel and our food, and then at the same time more demand for services, and we expect that only to increase. And so, you know, the ripple effect of just high stress on our teams, our board teams, our staff teams, our volunteers. And again, this is kind of where our worry comes from, right? We want to make sure that people are not feeling isolated, that they're remembering their resilient factors, that they're remembering that there's people out there that want to support them, you know. So all of the support is available on our website. We're happy to share. We're happy to have more in-depth conversations with folks. But mostly I just want, you know, there are definitely two sides happening right now, and people are experiencing both at a pretty deep level.
Yeah. And I know you spoke about that resilient side, but even in having some data collected about those impacts, I imagine, you know, there can be also power in that and kind of seeing things laid out in one place. Like how are you hoping that nonprofits will kind of take these findings and I don't know, either if there's a way to implement them or just like a takeaway, you know, even from the bad news can be kind of helpful to have that kind of concretely gathered.
Yeah, my hope really is that people feel less, organizations, nonprofit leaders, board, volunteers feel less alone, feel less like, oh my gosh, this is just happening to me. It might not be happening to anyone else. I think really right now that kind of strange kind of quiet that we're experiencing is just a lot of people with their heads down, just getting the work done, right? Like yeah. It's pretty overwhelming out there, I think, for lots of folks. And so for most folks. And so I just think, you know, being able to pick your head up and see that horizon and know that they're not alone. This is kind of an experience that many, many, many people are having. And so to reach out for support to not just us, but to each other, to just talk about it, to not kind of live in that silence around it. And then to raise your voice and really remember, again, that other side of that coin, that their partners, their donors, their volunteers, that high trust, that deep commitment, right? So not being afraid to talk about the hard stuff, because they're surrounded with people who believe in them. And, you know, I just hope that's what's resonating with folks, that we are going to just be so much stronger together, and that we have to talk about the hard stuff so that we can get support around the good stuff.
Yeah. In addition to, like, you know, the support of just, you know, having like verbal camaraderie and kind of knowing that you're not alone, is there any other kind of supports or resources that are, you know, I know there might not be as kind of, I asked this question, yeah. but for nonprofits that are struggling, or as the Foraker group that you are kind of trying to kind of hold in the equation of this time, as you say, people are looking towards the horizon.
We are definitely ramping up services where to try to create some economy of scale for organizations. So we already do, for example, we do what we call financial shared services, which is really back office financial services. So we process about 1,000 people's payroll every 2 weeks, for example. That team on my team that does that work are really just an amazing group of people who are really the back side of nonprofits' accounting departments, or they are their accounting departments. So with, you know, management and leadership decisions living inside the original organization, but we're doing all that kind of back office stuff. So we're trying to ramp up at Foraker more of those kind of back office services around HR, around fundraising, around other services that really then help the nonprofits then focus on and tribal organizations really focus on the things that they need to do that matter, you know, that really move their missions forward. So we are trying to ramp up in response. We also have, we have a website. On our website, we have a page around federal impact, and we have lots of tools and articles and conversations and connections. All for free, all available to people who are saying, like, okay, what should I do next? and I'm struggling here. How do I do that thing? And so, you know, again, just asking people to reach out and let us know in the ways that they're feeling challenged. We don't bring a crystal ball or a magic wand to the conversation, but we sure are ready to listen and try to figure out what's the best next step and how to help them navigate to that step.
Yeah. And I have kind of a downer question before my last question that will
okay,
be more positive note. But just as this group that supports nonprofits, is this kind of feeling like it's the new reality, or when you're thinking about the future and these challenges to nonprofits, are you kind of saying, like, okay, this is kind of what it's going to be like now? Or is there kind of this, like, hope that in another couple of years or different policy, yeah. like, I don't know, what's kind of your view in working with all these nonprofits, if you have that at this time, you know?
I have kind of two answers. One is, I think it's going to get worse before it gets better. And then I think it's going to get better. I think this is not our new reality. I really have been trying to encourage organizations to both kind of accept the place that we are right now and use it as an opportunity to ask big questions about what's driving our economic engine, and how strong are our relationships with government, and what should that relationship look like, and what does it look like to be more of an equal partner, and how do we have those conversations, which again require people to use their voice and speak up and talk about the importance of what we're doing. I think there's a lot of myth busting that needs to happen out there in the world, with our, especially our federal partners. that are not in Alaska. And I think it's temporary, but I also think it's going to get harder. We're going to see some more demand for services and more stress on our people before we figure out the way forward. So I'm hoping this is not a new normal, and I am definitely not encouraging people to say that this is a new normal.
Yeah.
But I am also encouraging people to accept this current reality and say, like, okay, we got to use this to make some changes that we probably always knew we needed to make, but here we go. Let's make them now.
Yeah. Okay, and in our last 2 minutes here, which is like speed round, one thing that I thought was kind of interesting from the report is that there are 59 nonprofits in the Bethel census area. According to your report, I don't know if that is nonprofits that you're partnering with, or in general.
But... Yeah. Oh, yeah. So sorry. Go ahead. Your question.
Oh no. I just thought that was kind of interesting because I think there's a lot of things that people don't realize are nonprofits that are such big parts of their communities, and it's just this kind of funny category that maybe not everyone knows. You know, they all function differently, but wanted to ask you speed round, about that number and that's just kind of a cool number to me as someone who lives here.
Yeah. So that number is a little bit dated now, but it's probably the same. Those numbers don't change a whole lot. That's all the nonprofits that are registered with the IRS in your census region. So it's your whole census region. And I should just note, it's 28% of employment in your region. Like, it's a big economic driver, these organizations. And that's everything from your healthcare to your utilities to lots of search and rescue, the youth school, so your arts councils, your community foundation, this radio station, right? Like, it's so much about the way our daily life. I often say, any Alaskan in any region of our state can't go through a day without interacting with a nonprofit. And we don't really even think about it. It's so normal for us because nonprofits are just woven into our lives every day.
Yeah.
And so I just really encourage all Alaskans to just celebrate the diversity of our nonprofits and how they're making our life work. And that's the myth busting, I think, that people don't understand in the lower 48. Alaskans have a different relationship with nonprofits than we might have in other places.
Totally. Yeah. Lori, yeah. I'm sorry we have to jump out right now, but thank you so much for joining me this morning.
So fun. Thank you so much. What a pleasure.
Thank you. All right. That was me, Samantha Watson, speaking with Lori Wolf, the president and CEO of the Forca Group. Thanks for listening to Coffee.